everyone, and welcome back once again to Purple Row Radio. This edition is intended to be for August the 1st, 2011, but as some of you guys may remember from last week, if you even noticed that no podcast showed up on time, had some technical difficulties, those got resolved. Hopefully we don't encounter the same problems again, but there's no guarantees, so I'm going to try to have this up as soon as possible, but obviously if you're listening to this, it got up successfully in some form or another. I should introduce ourselves. I'm Greg Stanwood, staff writer of Purple Row. I'm here along with the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin, as always. Andrew, you're very tired.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was. I took Friday off work and, you know, no reason other than just, I mean, we had a couple late nights earlier that week, so I figured, you know, screw it, I've already put my time in for the week, I'm out of here. Went and saw that Pirates exhibit at the museum, which is totally worth the money you pay for it. Well, especially the money that I paid for, because I'm a member. And then actually went back again the next day to go look at something else and see the movie by the Great Lakes, which ended up being a little more awkward than I anticipated. Like, you think Great Lakes, you know, it's going to be about,
you lakes.
Know, the lakes and geology and stuff like that. And yeah, it was a bit, and Niagara Falls is there too, and you know, nifty things like that, but at the same time, it was about lake sturgeon. Which again is fine, except that it's talking about like, trying to preserve their habitat, and it's showing like gory pictures in the early 1900s of people just butcher them for caviar or whatever, or burn them for fuel, and ugh, it was just weird because the people had to like wait till the sturgeon came up river to like save them because they're gonna like harvest their eggs and then grow their eggs up in like another lake or another river or something like that, so they can kind of reseed the Great Lakes area with these lake sturgeon. And it was just, I did not need to see the guy harvesting eggs from a large sturgeon. The thing was gigantic and it was really gross.
Huh.
It was educational, it was kind of interesting, but at the same time I'm like, all I can think about now is that sturgeon getting its eggs. Oh.
This is the Natural History Museum?
Yeah, but the IMAX thing.
I used to volunteer there back in the day. I worked their help desk, which was quite an adventure.
How bad are people at the museum about being coming to the help desk?
What do you mean?
Well, people who work at help desks tend to have, you know, about 7,000 customers or idiots stories. How bad?
Yeah, they can get a little iffy. You know, I was only there one day a week, and I was in high school when I was doing this, and so. Yeah, it was pretty, some strange people coming through. I'm not gonna really bring up too many stories about that, but it was an experience. I do remember though, kind of relating this back into On Topic, that I was at the museum volunteering when I first started to get back into baseball. So, back in 2006, I would often be, at that museum help desk with the, Rockies game day on that old game day up on the computer. Paying attention to that as things were going on. All right, let's talk about this trade deadline. We are recording this about 4 hours, 3.5 hours after the trade deadline came and went. And, you know, obviously we've got quite a bit to talk about as it relates to the Rockies, but we thought we'd just go over the divisional changes. We kind of did the same thing last year. And just kind of cover how things might have changed a little bit for not just us, but some of the teams we're most familiar with. So do you have a team where we want to start?
Oh, I suppose we could start with Arizona.
Okay.
Should we kind of go alphabetically on this? Well, actually, I guess we're going to do ourselves last because that would make the most sense. But
well, the Rockies are last alphabetically if you go by team name. So
true.
Yeah, let's start with the Diamondbacks. We can say that they got Ryan Langerhans from the Mariners, but obviously a pretty minor move there. The Diamondbacks did acquire a couple days ago a former Rocky and starter Jason Marquis. How do you think Marquis is going to contribute to their playoff aspirations? Because I haven't really paid attention to the Arizona rotation lately, and I didn't really know they were looking for a starter, so.
Well, Arizona, a guy like Jason Marquis isn't going to do bad in a rotation like that. It's a relatively young rotation still, you know, generally speaking. And he's had some success in the National League West.
Yes. He was an all-star when he was last here, so.
I dare say that would be successful. As long as he is healthy and his sinker is feeling effective, he'll be a plus, a positive influence in that rotation for reasons such as they don't have to overwork other guys or, you know, just whatever needs to be done to keep that pitching staff healthy and rolling. Because right now, if you take a look at them top to bottom, I mean, you got Ian Kennedy right up top, and he's having a great season. And then you also have, I'm having a bad time with this. Daniel Hudson, there we go. Daniel Hudson with his 3.81 ERA, and Joe Saunders behind him. But after that, you have, well, Josh Kallmeyer's actually having a pretty decent season as well. So take your pick between Zach Duke, Armando Galarraga, and Jason Marquis. I guess, is Galarraga injured or out for the season? I forgot to look back into him.
I thought he was outrighted.
He's outrighted.
He's not the system.
So not Galarraga. I'm just looking at the baseball reference pages, but I say, wait a minute, Galarraga doesn't sound right at all. So yeah, we're assuming that Marquis is going to be an upgrade on Zach Duke. Not Armando Galarraga. Sorry, God. A lot of guys to keep track of this season. I don't think it'll be too difficult to be an upgrade on Zach Duke. I mean, he doesn't have that many outings and a ERA above 5, and he's disturbingly enough the weak point of that rotation. Because really, you look at all the guys, Ian Kennedy has a 3.22 ERA, Hudson 3.81, Saunders 3.63, Kallmeyer 3.1. And this isn't to say that all of them are going to hold up, because Joe Saunders has like a strikeout to walk ratio at a 1.5 and a home runs per night of 1.3. He's most assuredly the black sheep in that rotation.
That's a lot of home runs.
he's been very homer friendly because he is. He's a fly ball pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in hitting friendly park. But like the other, Kennedy, Hudson, and Kallmeyer all have a strikeout to walk ratio above 3. And just have been pitching generally well, not a lot of walks among them. And bringing in a guy like Marquis this season, a 3.95 ERA, peripherals basically support that ERA. He kind of is what he is. Not a lot of walks from him either. Not a lot of strikeouts, but his ground ball rate has been, you know, pretty decent since his stint in Colorado. Last season was pretty disastrous for him with him being hurt all the time. But no, Marquis is going to provide a good addition to the Diamondbacks rotation, so they can just kind of keep the three good guys up doing what they're doing, keep Joe Saunders where he is, continuing to be strangely effective, and then you can pump Marquis at the end there to, you know, be a better number 5 option than Zach Duke.
All right, now the Diamondbacks also made a move for their bullpen. They traded away their first baseman Brandon Allen, one of the players who's been in the first base mix for them this season, and reliever Jordan Norberto in order to get Brad Ziegler from the Athletics. Ziegler is kind of a funny point because it seems like the A's are always developing fantastic new relief pitchers, kind of in the same vein that San Diego does, and they're always able to trade away names like Ziegler without really much consequence, and they still have like a fantastic bullpen sitting behind them. So, I mean, I know that at one point Ziegler got the chance to close, but I think that was only in kind of the wake of when Joey Devine was not was injured or some such. So, do you know anything about him as a player specifically?
Not too much. He's good, that's for sure. He has a career 2.5 ERA, a FIP of about 3.5, but he's still been a very effective reliever for the Athletics, and you know, a good right-handed reliever. Nothing flashy about him. He's a little wilder than you like to see, but he keeps the ball in the park really well, which could also be construed as an Oakland thing, but you know, it's not bad. I don't think he's really like a world beater or anything like that. He has a sub-2 career, why can't I put the straight strikeout to walk ratio? I had a long nap this afternoon, folks. I'm a little foggy still, and I don't know why. It's one of those that you just can't seem to shake. Man, I hate those. He's always been a, an average, or well above average pitcher as far as his various rate stats go. And which a lot of it is being driven down by his fielding independent numbers. So, I don't know. I think they overpaid. Maybe they way overpaid. Just, you know, Ziegler's good, and I, for their sake, I hope that he does a good job with them. He's having a good season, but I just, I don't know, I get the impression that they're gonna regret moving, you know, quite that much. But at the same time, it's not like Brandon Allen's never had his chances to be a
right.
productive first baseman. He just hasn't, like, come through yet.
That's kind of where I was going as well. I don't know how much value he really has at this point. He seemed kind of like a Joe Kochanski type in terms of the, not necessarily in terms of the player, but in the situation that, that he was in. Although, of course, there's no blockade the same level that Todd Helton sort of blocked him at this level. But similar situation there, I think, nonetheless. Should we move on to the Dodgers?
Yeah, we can do that.
This is a little tricky because they participated in probably the most complicated deal of the trade deadline. They got three players who I've never heard of before, or at least not that I can recall. It's catcher Tim Federowitz, reliever Juan Rodriguez, and starter Stephen Fife. Now they gave away, outfield prospect Trevon Robinson, and he was the only player that actually left the Dodgers in this trade. So they got three for one, basically. And then you had Eric Bedard go to Boston, and there's another Josh Fields, completely different one from the one we sold to Japan recently, involved in the trade. But, you know, I've heard the name, I've heard Robinson's name brought up a lot around the Dodgers community, and I think we saw him in spring training a couple times, and there was a lot of hype. Did he get called up at some point this season? Or am I confusing him with another position player prospect for the Dodgers?
I think you might be confusing with Xavier Paul.
No, I'm not confusing him with Xavier Paul. Paul's been up for like 4 years, and now he's a Pittsburgh Pirate.
Yeah, he got traded this season.
I'm thinking of somebody who was just called up this year, because I know D. Gordon was called up as well.
Which he was. Let me think. Who else on their team doesn't have it? Ivan De Jesus is up for a while.
That might have been who I was thinking of, was De Jesus there. Nonetheless, he was spoken highly of, and I don't really know how significant of a prospect he was, but, I've seen, people speaking negatively about this trade from the Dodgers' perspective, but again, there's so many names in this trade that we haven't really seen much of. I don't really know if you or I can have much of an opinion on it.
Well, it's, I don't know any of the guys, honestly, either. This is, kind of my, I don't know the Dodgers farm that well. I'm afraid to say, but it seems like they got more names, but not necessarily any more talent.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at Tim Federowitz's numbers. Not impressive. He's 23 in AA, and he's had one good season, which is 2009 and that was only in A ball in the South Atlantic League in Greenville. He batted like .345 with a whole bunch of power behind that. Well, not like a whole bunch, 10 home runs in 55 games. But ever since then, he's been kind of mediocre at best. And they're saying that he's going to make the majors next year. I guess they're just really hard up for catching, and I don't think they really picked up a good one. And I might not know any. I just might not know the guy's profile as well as far as scouting in Baseball America goes, but he's a seventh-round pick from 2008 and hasn't really done much in the minors, so I guess I'm just kind of curious why they think he's going to be this next major league guy.
Now, the other trade that they made was they went ahead and sent Rafael Furcal over to St. Louis for outfielder Alex Castellanos, not to be confused with Nick Castellanos. I don't believe they're at all related to each other, but regardless, I can't remember exactly how long Furcal had left on his deal, but I do know that he was not having a great season, especially by his own standards. And so I think when you look at the players who were on the Dodgers going into the week, Furcal was probably at the top of the list as most likely to get moved. So not too much of a surprise there. The Giants made most of their moves earlier in the month. At the deadline, they did acquire Orlando Cabrera, who seems to have played for every team just about over the last 3.5 years or so. And I know that in the off season, at least, it seems like we're regularly connected to Cabrera.
Mm.
He was the Giants gave up outfield prospect Thomas Neal to Cleveland. We'll have a lot to say about Cleveland for sure. But yeah, and then obviously we have them acquiring Beltran and I'm going to forget his name, Jeff Kepinger, earlier in the year. So obviously Giants are the favorites to win the division at this point. What do you think about these three acquisitions and how they might fill a couple holes in the Giants lineup?
Well, the two less big ones, Kepinger and Cabrera, I'm not entirely sure what they expect out of them. Kepinger's not very good. He's a major leaguer. He's been playing for Houston for a while. And for a little while anyways. He came over from Cincinnati in 2008. He's 31 this year. He has a career batting line of .283, .336, .394, which, kind of average. He hasn't done anything special with Houston or with San Francisco yet. Mm-hmm. I guess they're really hard up for him at second base. And, you know, what with their injuries, they just...
Right, yeah.
With their model of, you know, allow the runs to the opponents to score two runs or less, and we will just figure out the rest, then, yeah, I guess these guys aren't that bad because you can just kind of slide one player in for another.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, they have a ton of injuries in their infield right now. Tejada's out, and Freddy Sanchez is out, and I think there's a couple more as well. So obviously that kind of puts a priority on sort of those utility infield types like these guys.
Orlando Cabrera, I mean, I don't want to badmouth the guy too bad because he's been around for quite a while. And he's been pretty decent the entire time he's been around. Well, not the entire time. He's, you know, a decidedly below average bat over the course of his career, especially this season. He's always been a plus defender at shortstop, and really, that alone fits him in with the Giants' plans, or, you know, their philosophy of don't let the opponent score any runs and then we'll just figure the rest out magically.
Hmm. Now, what has Beltran been up to since joining the team? Because I haven't followed the standings particularly closely, but I haven't heard a lot of wins coming out of San Francisco recently, and I wonder if any value so far has been translated by Beltran into any success there.
No, they just got swept by Cincinnati. And Beltran, it's very, very small sample size, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But he is 1-for-14 with an RBI and a walk and 6 strikeouts so far as a Giant.
Okay, there you go.
And that hit was a single.
Okay.
He's been, well, I don't know. I secretly hope that he tanks, not because I don't like Carlos Beltran, but
because you don't like the Giants.
He's not gonna do anything that's gonna completely damage his free agent value with the Giants. Everyone say, oh, well, it's a pitcher's park, and oh, it's a trade. Rentals don't always work out, and lots of guys have been terrible after, you know, rental trade and ended up already. Whatever he does in San Francisco, it's not gonna matter with his next contract, however long it is, whoever it's with, whatever. He's Carlos Beltran. He kinda is what he is at this point. He's that super injury prone guy who has a good bat, but, you know, kind of always dangled on the cusp of superstardomness and stuff like that. I mean, he's going to help that Giants lineup just in the sense that he's better than everyone else they throw in the lineup. It was a good acquisition for him. I wish the Giants hadn't gotten him now that the Rockies are going to go anywhere. But, there's not too much to say about it, really. He's a switch hitter with good thump in his bat. He hits for okay average.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just kind of an upgrade the team needs. And it was depending on how you look at it, the Giants are kind of in this for, this team had better give them several years of success because, you know, they are all in right now on this team as far as farm and depth go.
Mm-hmm.
Although knowing, you know, Dave Rigetti, he's going to go and pull Josh Fogg off a scrap heap and turn him into a Cy Young winner or something like that.
I would be surprised if that happens. But
well, a lot of people would be surprised if some of the guys that they've been able to resurrect.
Ryan Vogelsong, yeah.
Specifically one Ryan Vogelsong, where, you know, people were pretty amazed by that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly am impressed by it. I don't know how much of that can be attributed necessarily to, this goes back to that debate that gets held every time that a player changes for the worse or for the better. You know, how much of it is the coaching or the managing? You know, how much of it has to do with the player, where in contrast to how he's coached? And I don't know. I mean, I'm not gonna outright say that Giants didn't help Ryan Vogelsong, because they certainly didn't hurt him. But, you know, it's just one of those things where maybe Vogelsong should get quite a bit of credit himself, I feel, for being able to do what he's done this season. Moving on to the Padres, I suppose, they made two very late moves. First of all, they traded Ryan Ludwig to the Pirates. And that was for a player to be named later. And they also acquired two pitching prospects, Joe Wieland and Robbie Erlin, from Texas for Mike Adams, although it was originally the news broke as it was Heath Bell. But Mike Adams, who, as we saw on the television broadcast, was actually still in uniform for most of the game, which was a little unusual. How do you think the Padres did here?
They didn't get too much, but they definitely were ready to move bullpen pitchers. They have this like inexhaustible source of bullpen, like we talked about with Grant, that just allows them to keep bringing up new guys, to keep being awesome bullpen people. So they might as well just keep working this cycle and trading bullpen guys for, you know, some other, I guess they're kind of trading bullpen guys for bullpen guys.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you know if Wieland and Erlin are both relief pitchers?
I don't know, I'd have to look that up. I haven't had time to digest just about any of these trades. They've all happened pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah, we're recording this just a few hours after all this went down. So, and we also had a Rockies game in between, that, so there was a lot of, stuff to follow.
Well, I was asleep, so I don't have a good excuse. But,
well, I think that's actually a perfect excuse.
We were up kind of late over the weekend writing and talking about Ubaldo.